We talk about 2.5 things on Kartak Clutter today. One to do with China, India and China. One to do with just Pakistan, one of Pakistan's internal affairs in which we are very interested. And third is more a comment or an opinion from me that comes both from my head and my heart. But I will keep that surprise. I will not tell you what that is about. So please wait for that. Now, first of all, India-China. What is it that we are talking about? In April, that is episode 716, of which I will share a link with you, we had raised a question, has India become a colony of China? And we had tried to then explain, because our logic was that a colonial relationship is one when the colonizing power actually buys your raw material cheap, converts it into finished goods and sells it back to you at a higher price. That is colonialism in the classic sense. That's what the British did to us for those couple of centuries. Now, and we had then said that it's not just that with China, we have a large trade deficit. It's also the quality of the deficit. And we had said, and that is the reason we said that while India might have a positive trade balance with America, India actually had about $29 billion of trade surplus with America, we can't apply the same logic and say America is a colony of China if India is a colony of China because India has a trade deficit with China. Because all deficits and surpluses are not the same. That's because most of India's exports to China were still raw materials or low value goods, whereas most of our imports from China were high value complex manufacture goods. And that is why it was like a relationship of colonialism. That was in April. In April, we also had noted that over the previous 6 years, India's average trade deficit with China had been $53 billion per year. $53 billion. That's a lot of money, right? In year 2020, it had become a bit less because also the trade had gone down between the two countries. Also, there was an expectation because Modi government had cracked down on imports from China because some things were banned coming in from China. Also, there was a general discouraging of imports from China and there was people were being nudged to look for substitutes to imports from China. We thought that maybe TikTok was banned. That is just one example. There was a feeling that maybe some of this will change. The data now the first 9 months data for this year is available. And read a story that my very young colleague Pia Krishnan Kutty, who also presents a new show called World 360. She keeps an eye on what's happening in the rest of the world and gives you wonderful updates and wonderful analysis. So please check that out also. But she's done a story. So please check that story. I will share a link with you on what the picture over the first 9 months of this calendar year shows. And then you will see that India is actually heading back, not just into the same familiar trouble, but this could now get worse. So look at this, this headline point right now. First of all, it does look like, looking at this 9 month figure, it does look like India-China trade this year is heading towards the $100 billion mark. So instead of the trade declining, it'll be at the highest ever mark, $100 billion. That'll be something. In fact, at least for one quarter this year, that is April-July, China was India's largest trading partner, beating America. So India-China trade goes into $100 billion, great thing. The other good thing there is that India's exports to China have gone up from an average of about $16 billion a year. They are already about 21, excellent. And they may end up at this rate, say maybe 27, 28, 29 billion dollars. So fantastic. That's also fantastic. What is troublesome on the other hand is that at the same time, India's imports have gone up. So in the first 9 months already, India-China trade has already reached 90.37 billion. So definitely in another quarter, that is October, November, December, it's also high consumption quarter. In another quarter, it's definitely going to top $100 billion, maybe something like 105, 107, or maybe even more billion dollars. But already in this $90.37 billion of trade with China, in the 9 months of this year until September, India has run up a deficit of $46.55 billion. If you run up deficit at the same rate, you will cross $62, $63 billion this year and maybe maybe beat our all-time high. Our all-time high for deficit in our trade with China is 2017 and 18. And now it looks like we are probably beating that. So in that episode 716, I'd given you some graphics. I'm sharing those again with you because you can see the previous 6 years comparison then, the 6 years before 2020, because those were normal years. 2020 was an abnormal year because of multiple and serial lockdowns and the pandemic being at its peak. But you see that in all those years, the deficit average of about 53 billion had been maintained. In 1 year, that is 2017-18, it was the highest at about 63 billion. In fact, 62.9 billion exactly. It does look like that this year we are heading to break that record, that dubious record. So instead of discouraging imports from China, instead of import substitution or Atmanirbharta or Make in India, I know that these programs take time. You can't see results overnight. But the fact is, for all the political messaging that it's not a good idea to import too much from China, as India's demand is going up, as India's economy is recovering, in fact, demand for Chinese goods is higher than ever before. And this data actually has been put out right now by the China General Administration of Customs. They've also shown that their import and exports have both gone up with America as well. So trade is up for China because China was also the first country to recover from the pandemic, but the economy recovered, whatever they did to ensure that it recovered, but it did recover. But for India, this is how the picture looks. And that is a very sobering thought. And that tells you that India has a lot of work to do. So I will also share with you the story that my colleagues Ramya Nair and Karvi Grewal had done in April, based on which I had done the previous episode of Cut the Clutter. So please see that as well. And if this looks bad enough for you in terms of India-China relationship, once again, if you will look at the mix of goods that India exports and the mix of goods that India imports, you will again see that colonial relationships stare at you very starkly, because India is still exporting things of lower value, iron ore, shrimp paste, stuff like that, whereas the Chinese export machinery, electronics, computers, stuff like that to us. So there is a big asymmetry there that India needs to address. And remember, when we tell you the deficit between India and China, we exclude the India-Hong Kong trade. Because earlier, it was okay to see Hong Kong as yet another entity. But now, Xi Jinping has pretty much ensured that Hong Kong is nothing but another province of China, another property of China. So that also has to be added. So India's dependence on China, Indian industries, dependence on China for machinery, electronics, gadgets, Indian consumers' dependence for electronic gadgets in particular, computer equipment, all that now has become very, very significant. And given the fact that India-China relationship has really gone south in Eastern Ladakh and elsewhere, and looks like it's more tense than it's ever been since the clash in Galwan more than a year ago, This is a very eye-opening set of figures, so I thought I'll share them with you. Now, Pakistan. Last week, we spoke about this tamasha that's going on over the ISI chief's appointment in Pakistan. You remember General Faiz Hamid, who's the current ISI chief, he was moved as Corps Commander Peshawar, from where on, next year, he was supposed to become one of the four candidates for the Army chief's position as he would have served in a core commander's position. That is a requirement in Pakistan. And in his place, Lieutenant General Nadeem Anjum, who was Karachi core commander, he had been moved to be the DG ISI. Problem, the catch there was that his move had not been notified by the Prime Minister's office in Pakistan. His move had been announced by the Army headquarters, or GHQ as it's called. All Pindi, Rawalpindi. Because Rawalpindi thinks, I mean, they do everything. Sometimes they might get the Prime Minister to put his dhobi mark on their orders. But in this case, they did not even follow that nicely. So it does look like Imran Khan took umbrage at it. And he has till now refused to issue a notification on the new ISI chief's appointment. And now it is the most publicly discussed secret, quote unquote secret in Pakistan, that Imran Khan is trying to fight back with General Bajwa to say that I will have the ISI chief that I want. You can't thrust an ISI chief on me because it's my prerogative to appoint the ISI chief. Now, no Pakistani prime minister has taken a position like that and gotten away with it. Imran Khan now has got himself into it. One reason he's doing it, is that next year is the election in Pakistan. When that election happens, he knows that he's not at all guaranteed a majority again. Even last time he did not have one, but he was then somebody found a majority for him. And that somebody in Pakistan is always the army through the ISI. So it's very important for him to have a friendly ISI chief. Now, Faiz Hamid has been very helpful to him in many different ways. Faiz Hamid, by the way, also is somebody who's had very close relations with Tehreek-e-Labbaik Pakistan, TLP, that is Khadim Rizvi's organization, which is very extremist, very conservative, which had a member of which had assassinated, they are Sufi Barelvis, a member of which had assassinated Salman Taseer, the governor of Pakistani Punjab, because he had spoken in favor of a Christian woman who had been given a death sentence for blasphemy. Now, he was used, Faiz Hamid was used by the powers that be to get Tehreek-e-Labbaik to come and put a gherao around Islamabad, essentially to defeat Nawaz Sharif, to turn Nawaz Sharif into a lame duck, after which his government went downhill. And one of the issues that they came up with at that point was that his government was not being strong enough in enforcing the adherence to Khatm-e-Nabuwat. Khatm-e-Nabuwat means that the Holy Prophet was the last prophet. After that, nobody can claim prophethood. That is an indirect attack on the Shias, but a very direct attack on the Ahmadiyyas. So that was to make sure that Ahmadiyyas stay out of all power structure. Ahmadiyyas are not seen as Muslims. Even when General Bajwa was being appointed, the rumor market in Pakistan picked up saying that General Bajwa had some Ahmadiyya connection. So he had to go through complex religious ceremonies to swear his allegiance or adherence to Khatm-e-Nabuwat, saying that he fully believes that the Holy Prophet Muhammad was the last prophet and nobody can claim prophethood after that. Now, he's done it ceremonially and religiously more than once, and yet this latent threat sits. Now, there are wheels within wheels within wheels. To say smoke and mirrors for what happens in Pakistani politics and Pakistani army will be a joke. This is much more complicated. So, Faiz Hamid, because he has controls over TLP, Tehreek-e-Labbaik Pakistan, he can let them lose any time, including on Bajwa. He's not saying it, but that is now a very strong speculation, because as Faiz Hamid was moved to Peshawar, mysteriously, the very next day, Lahore Deputy Commissioner gave orders. This is not orders from the top. Lahore Deputy Commissioner gave orders to release from prison Saad Rizvi. Saad Rizvi is the son and successor of Khadim Rizvi, who had passed away sort of mysteriously at a very young age, right? And we never knew how he passed away. Maybe it was COVID, maybe it was not. But he passed away very soon after delivering a fiery speech. His son had taken over. He was in jail because he was threatening to basically jam all of Pakistan. He suddenly got released. So once again, people add 2 and 2 and make 22 also in Pakistan. So the conclusion is that this is an indirect threat from Faiz and Imran to Bajwa, that if you become too difficult, we can start the same chatter again, and that will be very inconvenient for you. In the process now, the country does not have an ISI chief. So last night, stories appeared, obviously inspired leaks, sources from the Prime Minister's office in Pakistan, saying that the Prime Minister had now asked the Army Chief, because Monday evening they had a meeting going late into the night, asked the Army Chief to send him a panel of 3 candidates, 3 generals, and he will then interview them and choose one of them. Right? And the 3 names that were floated, which has now been denied, because now, again, official sources are saying that these names are not authentic. Names that were floated were Lieutenant General Saqib Mahmood Malik, Chief of Logistics, Lieutenant General Sarfraz Ali, Corps Commander Quetta, and Lieutenant General Nadeem Anjum, Corps Commander Karachi, who had already been appointed ISI Chief by the Army Chief's orders. Now, we don't know whether these names are correct or not, whether a panel of three will be sent or not. In fact, it does look like that because of these leaks, the Army and the Army Chief got so miffed that they are now refusing to even give Imran Khan this face saver to say, okay, we sent him a panel of three. We just told him to which one of the three to pick. Huh? But at least he can go through the facade of saying, okay, maine chuna, right? I'm the Prime Minister, I chose. Now they are even denying him that. So this tamasha is going on. Meanwhile, General Nadeem Anjum has given up charge as Karachi Corps Commander, and I suspect if I read the Pakistani media, he'll land up in Islamabad on Monday in uniform in Appada, which is the ISI headquarters, and be given full protocol and reception. So before that, this has to be sorted out. Now, what does it remind me of? This Imran Khan, desperate Imran Khan effort to somehow get legitimacy and somehow tell the world and his own voters, etc., because he has an election coming up next year, that he is the real boss. He's the Prime Minister. Now, his position is quite weakened. So please also see, and I will share a link again in this case, the print debates series with Jyoti Malhotra, where very well-known Pakistani journalists who are very, very well informed also, Aisha Siddiqa, who is a globally acknowledged expert on Pakistani army, and also Murtaza Solanki. And in that discussion, you can see the emphasis is that Imran Khan is much weakened than before. And Imran Khan now is pushed to the wall by these changes in the army. So he's trying to fight back. So far in Pakistan, no elected leader has fought back against the army and survived to tell the tale. This has risen to another level where now there is this latent threat that this ISI chief will then use his own dark forces, dark conservative Islamist forces, to start throwing some muck, at least indirectly, at the army chief. So this has become a fascinating situation. But Imran Khan's desperate efforts to find respectability remind me of a story from the childhood. In fact, if you read the legend of the Nihangs, right, chances are all of us know who the Nihangs are. Nihangs are those very ceremonially dressed in blue, saffron, and very ceremonially armed Sikh warriors, right? You see them also riding horses. We saw some of them with horses and spears in Delhi also on 26th of August when they sort of assaulted the Red Fort, Lal Killa of Delhi. So they are a group, Nihangs. Now, Nihangs don't do too much work. Nihangs go home to home and you're supposed to give them food, money, whatever. You're supposed to look after them because they were the traveling soldiers. They were the traveling army, right? They didn't have a home. So wherever they went, people gave them food, people gave them help, people looked after them. So the tradition continues. So, you know, under the tradition, they are not supposed to beg. So how do they now, because they are not an active army anymore, how do they now go and get their stuff from households without making it look like they are begging? So I remember from my very early childhood in Punjab, even my mother would give them something when they'd come in. But if you gave them something, they will not take it from you because that is like you are giving something to them just like that. They have to earn it. And usually they have to earn it by pretending to be fighting for it. So you have to put it under a tree near your house and they'll get on top of a horse. Or if he didn't have a horse, would sprint at it holding his spear and go and pick it up with the spear. And sometimes when they were on a horse, you hang it on a tree and they went in with a sword, took it from the tree or with a spear and took it from the tree. So that was the pretense, the Nihangs pretense to say, I didn't just earn it, but I won it. And Imran Khan's desperate efforts, I'm so sorry to say that. I am an incorrigible fan of his as a cricketer. But this reminds me of that story. Having said that, I told you, I will also give you a little opinion. So just watching this Aryan Khan bail hearings, it worries me. It worries me. It should worry any Indian. And it doesn't worry me just because I'm a parent. Or not just because I might have known Shah Rukh Khan, which I do. It worries me because of the way Indian courts have now begun to take their own sweet time. Own sweet time, which is not sweet for the person seeking liberty at the other end, with bail applications. In this case, this bail hearing has gone on for a long time. This latest hearing took 2 full days. After that, they've reserved their order for 5 full days. Now, I can understand the court saying, oh, we need time and holidays are coming. But these 5 days, a citizen, an adult, I'm not even saying a child, he's 23, an adult, a young adult, will be sitting in jail. Whereas you could have taken a call today, either to say, look, boss, you have to be in jail, we have these reasons, you have to give reasons. Or you could have let him go. But just because you're not able to decide to make someone be in jail for 5 additional days after he's been in jail for so long, that is not the way judiciary should function or judiciary should respond to an individual, any individual's demand for liberty. An individual going to a court demanding his or her liberty is a fundamental right. That's why the courts are there for. The fundamental, the primary job of the court, of course, it's to give everybody justice, but the most important justice that a court must ensure for the citizen is the right to liberty. If somebody just tells you, okay, boss, 6 hours, sit here, you will not move without my permission, it is, you feel rotten, you feel like hell. In this case, day after day after day, now for 5 days, somebody has to sit. And this is not just his case. We've seen this happen now in case after case after case. And I think this is a time when Supreme Court and others have to intervene. And this is something that our judicial authorities, our top minds in Indian judiciary have to debate and have to look within. Thoda sa introspection is needed. Apni antaratma mein jhaanke dekhna chahiye. Apne gareban mein jhaanke. They should look within. Are they doing what they are supposed to be doing? Are they being true to their calling? These are very important issues. 2-day hearing for bail reminds me of a story, and I will conclude with that. That's a story about Ram Jethmalani. In the 2G cases, when the courts were refusing bail to all the accused in the very beginning, immediately, he once came up to Supreme Court of India, Ram Jethmalani being Ram Jethmalani, and he said, Lordship, I have a bail hearing. I want 2 full days allocated for it. So the judge on the bench said, Supreme Court bench said, 2 days for a bail hearing? Why? He said, because I have to teach your lordships the law of bail. Right? So remember that. Everybody says bail is the law, jail is an exception. Right? But the way our courts are functioning right now, jail is the law, bail is an exception, and this is a very bad augury, not just for the rule of law in India, but for the faith in justice system. I am not saying who's guilty, who's innocent. I'm not saying Aryan Khan is guilty, Aryan Khan is innocent. You might have good reason to deny him bail, but say that today. Say that today, put your hand up and say, I've said this, I'm accountable for what I've written, these are my reasons. But to keep somebody in jail for 5 days because you can't decide whether they deserve bail or they don't deserve bail is something that Indian judiciary should now reflect on, because it's now a common enough phenomenon.